What is going on, everybody? Your favorite hockey show is back. It is the Full Press Hockey Weekly Show here on at Full Press NHL on Twitter. Get it at Full Press Coverage on Facebook and YouTube, fullpresshockey.com, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, as well as on Twitch. I'm your host, the voice of Full Press Hockey, Jim Berenger, joined once again by Chris Wassel. He's back from the Black, and Ian Glennon behind the scenes producing this show every week and every time we do it. Chris, time to rock and roll, buddy.
Always time to rock and roll.
Always time to rock and roll. Braden, what is going on? A little announcement, I think, off the top before we get into the topics. Yours truly will be down in Nashville covering the NHL draft for Full Press Hockey. So just wanted to announce that off the top of the show.
Awesome deal.
Right?
It is an experience. Like I said, there's places you need to go and things to do.
Broadway. That's the only place I'm going.
Yeah, that may be the only place, you know, only place you literally go, because that's the only place you really do need to go for the next week.
It's country music, it's NHL, two of my favorite things. It's gonna be awesome time. Thank you, Murray, for hooking everything up, getting through the process. And I can't wait to be down there, giving you guys even more coverage than I did during the Stanley Cup playoffs. We're ready to rock and roll with this thing. Things are coming, big things.
Yeah, just wait till next year, ladies and gentlemen. We're doing Vegas next year.
Oh, baby, we are doing Vegas next year. We're doing this in style. Oh, we're doing it in style. We will be there too in Vegas. It's going to be sick. But Nashville next week, obviously the buyout window's open. Everything's leading to the draft. We'll talk about that in a minute or a few minutes time. But we have to go off the top with the Hockey Hall of Fame, the inductions. They came out yesterday, Wednesday. First of all, before we get into the obviously elephant in the room and guys that didn't get in and the snub, we want to talk all about that. We have to praise the people that did get in, because I want to get, Heinrich Lundqvist, congratulations, the goalie union, the goalie huggers, the guys that are goalies. We know Ian's a goalie. He loves the position. So the card membering, carrying of the goalie union, they're happy. Heinrich Lundqvist, Tommy Barrasso, Mike Vernon, Pierre Turgeon, Caroline Ouellette, and then Ken Hitchcock and Pierre Lacroix in the builders category. I mean, it's a deserving class.
You got three goalies in.
That's a record.
I tried to go back and look the last time three goalies got in one class, and I couldn't find it, at least in the last 10 or 20 years. I may just overlooked something, like a name that just didn't happen to appear on Google search.
Right.
But I mean, that's pretty rare.
I think you may have to go back even to the big guys from like the later time, from like the 60s, 70s. When those guys ended up retiring, maybe those classes maybe had a couple of goalies there. But, I mean, look, Henrik Lundqvist was going to be a lock, a first ballot Hall of Famer. You know, we can debate whether he was a first ballot Hall of Famer or not. Doesn't matter. He's in. And, look, still the best hair in the business. Still, you know, he's a great analyst. Does great in TNT. You know, you hope MSG gives him more talking time, because he really is insightful. And just everything he's gone through with his heart and everything – just the fact, all that stuff, good dude. He's going to be classy, class it up. I know, you look at Stanley Cups, he doesn't have any, played in a final, won a gold medal, international career, but he's one of the all-time leading, wins for the Rangers, one organization, the whole nine yards. Yes, he did go to Washington, but he never officially played. So he did play one season in, he played every year with the New York Rangers.
Right. I mean, look, class act, as any hockey fan can learn to respect a guy like that. I mean, he had his legendary moments of good and bad, like every Hall of Fame goalie does. But without a doubt, he led this class.
He did.
Which is a sign of ultimate respect. Obviously, you have some of the other names, and the one that – we'll get into the other elephants, but one of the nice ones for me personally was Pierre Turgeon.
Yeah, Turgeon deserved to be in there. I think, you know, because 1,000 points, 1,000 games played. Like the other guys that are in there that went in before him had similar numbers and he didn't go.
Right.
I know he doesn't have Stanley Cups. I know he doesn't have that.
He would have had one if it wasn't for Dale Hunter. Everybody knows, and their aunt and uncle, Canada would still have a drought right now. If it wasn't
because that was
Montreal was not winning that cup.
No. Well, look, if it wasn't for the Islanders taking out Pittsburgh, I think Pittsburgh's winning three straight.
That's how crazy that year was.
You thought
for sure. Man, that was that Islander team was the team of destiny before Montreal won all those games in overtime and this and that, and they still had to beat the Islanders twice in overtime in that series.
Yeah, they did. They won 10 straight in overtime. So, but look, Turgeon played the Islanders, Buffalo, bounced around St. Louis, obviously, he's remembered, went to Colorado towards the end. Turgeon, great player. Obviously, Mike Vernon, he backboned two teams to a Stanley Cup. The Flames team in 89, I believe now six members of that team are in the Hockey Hall of Fame, along with a couple of executives from that team as well. Mike Vernon definitely. And then he wins the Conn Smythe in 97. You know, he backstops Detroit, and that was a loaded Detroit team. Nobody beating that team. But he wins the Conn Smythe trophy because of his play. Mm-hmm. And so that's that. You know, Tom, and think about it. So Mike Vernon, I found out that today, was drafted still in high school by the Flames. Well, Tom Barrasso was drafted in high school too and came right to Buffalo. Rookie season, wins the Vezina, wins the Calder, has a couple Stanley Cups in Pittsburgh, maybe has another one in 90, another fluke year, 96, right? That Penguins team was loaded, and they lose to Florida.
I'll argue, and some people said, no, you're crazy, but I'll argue that 96 team might have been more potent than even the 93 team that didn't win.
I think the 96 team was way better than the teams that won the Stanley Cup.
It's crazy.
Way better.
People just, I mean, they didn't just beat teams. They disposed of teams
They beat up teams. Mario came back from his cancer treatment. Wow. He was back and he was dominating. Like, he never left. Jagr was still there. I think Francis was still on a team. That team was loaded. Barrasso was back between the pipes. Cause I think on and off him and Ken Reggett were splitting time. But you know, look at his record. Look, most wins US goalie. So he's did a lot to get in. I'm surprised he didn't come in. Get in sooner. But again, look, Vernon, you can agree now, and we'll get to this in a little bit, but you can agree whether or not the numbers get in there, but they got the Stanley Cup, so they're in, and there's no debate, and they both are deserving.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you look at the numbers don't lie. I know there's Paul Peduti, who does an excellent job with the Hall of Fame analysis. It's worth at least going down the rabbit hole for a night in the summer.
Right.
When you look at how he does metrics for who's borderline, who isn't, it's pretty accurate. I mean, yeah, there's some intangibles that you just can't quite measure accurately, and he admits it, with transparency. But it's an excellent resource for those who are looking to get in the game a little bit more, and you have a little bit of time before, free agency hits.
Yeah, free agency hits back to normal on
July 1st
again. So, but look, he's in. Caroline Ouellette, one of the best women's hockey players. You could see the most decorated player in the class, I think.
Crazy, right?
Most decorated. Four Olympic golds. Right, four Olympic golds. Yeah,
one, two, three, four.
Six world championships.
World championships.
I was there for one of them, 2012 in Vermont. She was on Team Canada that beat Team USA in Burlington.
That was one of the best tournaments.
Switzerland, Florence Schelling was between the pipes. Wow. Dominated. I mean, that was Switzerland's first medal. Women's hockey's come a long way. since then, and good for her to get in, deserving. You know, another, you know, Jen Botterill eventually get in too. And then obviously you look at the builders, Pierre Lacroix. I mean, look, he built that Nordiques team, that Colorado Avalanche team. Great hockey mind, general manager, got the right pieces in place to get that team so successful. And then Ken Hitchcock, great coach.
Yeah, you can't dispute what a guy like Hitchcock did. I mean, probably may have been able to win two cups or more in Dallas potentially. I mean, for 3-4 years, that Dallas Colorado like Western Conference inevitable clash was like must see TV.
And them in Detroit too, Colorado Detroit or Colorado Dallas.
Yeah, it's something like how that period from like about 95, 96.
Well, it was 98. It starts Detroit Dallas.
Overlaps.
Then it goes Dallas, yep. Colorado. And I think, did they go back to back?
And then
I think
it circled back at the end.
Yeah, it circled back at the end with Detroit, Colorado. Yeah, it was crazy. Like, so that stretch of time, I mean, it was great. The Western Conference was so difficult. And whoever you played, you beat up on, and
you had to watch out for the Cujo landmine.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly. I mean, Cujo when he's in Edmonton in '97 just takes out, and that's a good place to go. I mean, before we get to Alexander McGillney, because everybody wants to talk about McGillney, and you know, got a new piece up on Full Press Hockey about that.
Is Cujo not in the Hall of Fame?
How is Cujo not in? Like, this guy has the most wins over Barrasso and. And Vernon.
Look at his career numbers and look at the teams
he's
that he was on.
He's fourth all time in wins.
Yeah, I mean, I'll even like just go aside off like the big gaudy numbers. Just right. The little things like the amount of playoff wins he has in games where his team was by far the underdog of underdogs.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's insane. Okay, then the amount of series that he stole several series probably by himself.
97 against Dallas.
That's the one everyone always talks about. It's the one you see on NHL Network's classic series in a day. Like you see it somewhere every summer.
So all right. So yeah. So he's seventh all time in wins. All right, but he's fourth of guys that are eligible for Martin Brodeur's in. Patrick Waugh's in. Marc-Andre Fleury will be in. Roberto Luongo's in. Ed Belfour's
in.
Lundqvist is in, Sawchuk's in, Jacques Plante's in, Esposito, Hall, Fuhr, Hasek, Vernon's now in. I mean, Cujo's going to get in eventually, right?
You got to think so. I mean, look, all right, so I get a few things along the way, and you look at some numbers and you go, all right, well, he's under 500 in the playoffs. Anybody look at the teams that he, like, guided into the playoffs? These are teams that were probably one and done, almost every one of them. And there's three notable runs, obviously. And I'll argue even four. There's the last season in Toronto, which a lot of people forget about. Just
what was that, 02, right?
Yep, that was when they ran into...
Well, he was there, but he was there, I believe, nine... when he was there when the Devils played the Leafs in those classic six, seven-game series.
Yep, 2000 and 2001, and he almost stole. I'll argue the 2001, he almost stole that.
Yeah.
And people, look, that, all right, so for that year, for example, here you go. His save percentage those 2 years that they lost to New Jersey, 932 and 927.
I mean, bro.
I mean, I understand. Different era numbers are inflated a little bit, but I mean, if I go a little bit further, and the one that everybody talks about, 97-98, the steal against Dallas.
The steal against Dallas. I mean, Cujo
952 save percentage literally stood upside down and backwards on his head.
Yeah.
And he's not in. It irks a lot of people. It does. I mean, and there's some people that go, if you look at even like the Peduti chart though, Jim, it's really weird. I mean, he's in.
Oh, he's definitely in. And I gotta throw another name in there, and I know his career was cut short by injuries, but I think Mike Richter deserves to be in. I know he's, you know, we got to talk about it, but I mean, Mike Richter, I think Stanley Cup champion, World Cup of Hockey, the saves he made in 94 and in the 96 World Cup of Hockey and 2002 for the silver medal. I mean, this guy backboned a lot of good Rangers teams, and he was there even during the bad years, and he still put up good numbers.
Yeah, so people will say, well, okay, Chris, it's not the Hall of Very Good.
But it's becoming that.
Yeah, it's like, do you realize it's becoming that slowly but surely, like in every sport?
It is. Oh, absolutely. And look, I was thinking about this today because I was listening to the radio, and you know, you talk about committees, and you know, again, this is not an all sports talk show that we do here, but I'm going to make the analogy. Okay. Everybody knows Chris and I follow college football. Okay. There's a thing called the college football committee. Okay. We all get mad when these rankings come out and these things come out because it's all about resume strength, all this stuff. Again, it's the same thing that happens here. And again, I want the Bart Simpson meme, whatever. I will not get upset. I will not get whatever. The thing about getting upset about these things, because it's based on committees, and we get upset with the college football stuff, especially when the first one comes out and the teams that don't get in and this and that. It's like, all right. But when you're looking at resumes and everything, Cujo, I mean, this dude, you put his resume against guys that are in there, and I believe Roberto Luongo has set the standard for guys that don't have cups to get in there.
Mm-hmm.
Cujo has a gold medal. Yes, he didn't backbone the team, but he has a gold medal.
Is it gold? He was in that preliminary round. He was a great mentoring force to Marty.
Right. So I just don't know what he needs to do to get in. But again, he's won. Like I said before, Jennifer Botterill, get it in eventually. I hope so. She deserves to be, and she's killing it for Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada, wherever she is. All right. The elephant in the room.
More elephants.
Alexander McGillney wrote about it, deserves to be in the Hockey Hall of Fame. I agree with that. Absolutely. BCS, way better.
Wait till you see this year, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh yeah, this year's gonna be awful. But Alexander McGillney is a Hockey Hall of Famer in my book. The resume alone gets him in. Yeah. He is a member of the Triple Gold Club. Last time I checked, there's 9 members of the 30 members that are part of that. There'll be more because Crosby will get in, Taves, all those guys will get in.
Yeah, it's going to be a laundry list of people that get in.
There's going to be a long list of guys that are Triple Gold Club members. He revitalized his career in New Jersey. He was a 43 goal scorer in 2000-2001. And you can argue the team that lost in the Stanley Cup final was better than the team that won. But he was integral with that line with Scott Gomez. Those two guys were perfect together. But not only that, look what he did in Buffalo. Like the 30 goal seasons that he had, 76 goals in 1993. I mean, no one's even touched that. Every other member of the 75 Gold Club is in the Hockey Hall of Fame. You know, 1,000 points in 990 games. I don't know what else he needs to do.
And take
everything else aside, right? Put everything else to the side, okay? We'll just talk about his resume. And put the stuff about he may not attend. The guy is a Hockey Hall of Fame player. And the fact that he's not even nominated to get to that point is a shame.
Just throw the freaking politics out the window. Just
right, exactly.
What was the excuse all the other years?
That's what I'm saying. Like, the guy's been eligible since 2009. Why didn't he go in when Dino Cicerelli was the only player that went in the Hockey Hall of Fame?
Doesn't make sense. It really, there's just certain players. It doesn't make sense why they're not in. And he's now the poster child. Look, I remember this story, and look, I still don't know how true this is, but I remember Bob McKenzie and Jeff Merrick telling me this story at the 2013 draft. The reason why Pat Burns didn't get in the Hall of Fame right when he should have, or while he was alive for that matter.
That's still BS.
There's a certain guy with the initials of SS that shall not be named, of Quebecois descent, that said literally, there is no way he was on the committee at the time, I will ever vote for that expletive until he is dead. Nobody can confirm that quote, but it made too much sense for the timing of the quote and for the context of the quote.
Well, I think I was reading about other players that got in that, you know, they have to be, you know, the way the nominee process is. And if you get, like with Lindros, it took for Bobby Clark to step up for him to finally get in. Like, yeah. They put all that stuff aside, and then it's like, yeah, you got, look at his resume. I mean, just look at it. I mean, there's not a lot of guys that are from that Soviet Union team in there, and there should be guys in there. I mean, like, if you think about it, like a guy like
Boris, hockey hall. Yeah, it's a hockey hall.
If you think about it, a guy like Boris Mikhailov should be in there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of guys from that Soviet team.
There's a long list.
And I know, look, it probably still exists, the tension between the two nations. Because, you know, we had the 72 Summit Series and all that stuff. Guys came over, and I know guys didn't like the Russians coming over.
Yeah.
But these guys changed the way the game was played. Like, legitimately changed the way the game is played.
Yeah, I implore people, go watch the HBO special from after Miracle. Go watch a few of them. There's one at ESPN Plus that's on ESPN Plus as well.
Go watch the thing on NHL Network about McGinley how he got here.
Yeah, I mean, that was that alone. First Russian
to defect.
Defect. Gee, if that isn't a
history. Again, look, Bobby Orr changed the game. Bobby Orr changed the game. Jacques Plante changed the game. Wayne Gretzky changed the game. Martin Brodeur changed the game. Those guys are in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
I mean, there were defenses specifically designed to try and slow down Alexander Mogilny. And in more than one locale. That says something right there. I mean, the fact that even later in his career, there were teams that legitimately, the first thing they did was, how do we slow down Mogilny?
It was a potent shot. I mean, he played with Pavel Bure in Vancouver.
Yeah, for those that don't know. Yeah, okay, those two are on the wings. Which one are you trying to stop? Pray?
If you stop one, you're not stopping the other.
Yeah.
I know he had some, towards the end of Vancouver, he did have some down years and stuff. But that's when he gets traded to New Jersey and things take off. He was such a perfect piece for the Devils. He really was. And I'm not trying to put my fandom out there. I'm trying to look this analytically and look at the numbers. And McGinley's a Hockey Hall of Fame player. I'm sorry, he is. And I know that Buffalo Sports put him in the Hall of Fame and he didn't come over. So what if he doesn't come to the ceremony? Big deal. He's a Hockey Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Maybe his English isn't that good to do a speech. So what?
Yeah, he is a Hall of Famer.
Understand? To have him send in a video that's translated. So what?
It's not hard.
It's not hard. The guy deserves to be in. Again, deserves to be in. Another guy, Patrick Elias. Okay? He's a guy that deserves to be in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Again, I know we're talking about Devils here, but you know what? He deserves to be in. He needs to be in. His numbers alone get him in. The two Stanley Cups, Daniel Alfredson's in, Daniel and Henrik Sedin are in. They don't have the heart. I mean, look, I know they have the individual awards and the medals. All right. Patrick Elias has records for New Jersey, won two Stanley Cups, integral in both Stanley Cup runs.
For a while, topped the overtime game winning goal list on most playoff counters out there. Right. So.
You know, has medals internationally. So he's a Hockey Hall of Famer. Jeremy Roenick, Keith Kachuk, Rod Brind'Amour. The list goes on of guys that deserve to be in. And you know,
Theo Fleury.
Sorry, Theo Fleury. We know why Theo's not in.
Yeah, God forbid.
We know why Theo Fleury's not in.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, it's unfortunate. You just hope that, well, maybe someday.
Yeah, you hope, maybe. You know, so I mean, look, you know, things are coming around, and you know, people, and you just hope. But I mean, you know, you got guys next year, first time eligible players, Pavel Datsyuk. You think he's getting in?
Yeah, he's getting in.
Honestly, do you think he's getting in?
As crazy as it sounds, he is going to get in. And you know why he's going to get in? Steve Yzerman.
Yeah, Steve Yzerman will get him in. Absolutely.
I think that's the one reason. He's gonna push heavily for that.
Patrick Marleau, is he a first ballot Hall of Famer in your opinion?
Nope. I put another Patrick in before I even considered
Marleau. Shea Weber.
Weber's interesting because Weber had quite a few really amazing years, and then obviously we saw how it ended.
You got Pekka Rinne and Ryan Miller, first ballot Hall of Famer, first timers, as so is Ilya Kovalchuk.
They're not getting in.
No. If Rinne and or Miller get in, Cujo better be joining them.
Yep.
I'm just saying that right now. Obviously, no. McGillney's back up. Keith Tkachuk is still there. I don't know how Rob Brendamore's not in there.
Brendan Moore is interesting because he's kind of bubble by longevity, but still probably should sneak with the way the committees are and voting is now. At some point, you think he's going to sneak in somewhere.
I would think so. I mean, like, I still can't believe, what year was that with Dino Cicerelli? What year was that?
Good old Dingo. Hey, it's not my fault. That was his nickname. Let's see. All right. So this is interesting because this is where we go down the medieval rabbit hole.
Like, what year was that? That was 2010. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's find the class that, just before we move on, because I want to do a little something here.
You want the? Oh, this is fun.
I just want to do this for fun. Okay. Oh, so my God. That was the year that Cammy Granato, Angela James, Devolano, and get in.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the smallest class ever.
Yep.
So you're telling me that Alexander McGillney couldn't have got in 2010?
Yeah, I'm trying. All right, so you had two women get in, and look. They're more than dessert. Those are no brainers.
No, those were no brainers.
Just for the caliber of player. But I would have, as somebody said to me, that was a year that, you know, six or seven should have gotten in.
Yeah, exactly.
Even the year before. Remember that the year before was just that ridiculous year.
It was a stacked year. I mean, there was so many first time guys. That was just a stacked year.
I mean, look at the 09, obviously the 09 list. You have one iconic builder.
Yeah, Lou Lamoriello.
And then you have
Leach,
Hall,
Yzerman, and Hall.
I mean, wow. That's just an action-packed, star-studded sort of.
I mean, that was the problem. You go on year after year, the guys that were eligible to get in, It was getting harder and harder.
You look at some of the years. It's funny because it's like you used to joke, oh, the odd number years, like 07 even with Stevens, Francis, and Messier. Yeah. And Al McGinnis, of course. How could I forget Al McGinnis? Al McGinnis once grazed me the shot at practice, and I thought I was dead.
Yeah.
It just hit my pad.
It's just crazy, man. Like, you have guys that are in there, like, you know, that you know, like the class of 2020 with like Hosa and Aginla, and you just go on the list of guys that get in, and it's just like, all right.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, we're going to see what happens, and hopefully Alexander McGillney and some of these other guys get in.
I hope so.
You hope. But again, congratulations to everybody that gets in. And November will be fun in Toronto, as it always is. All right, moving on to the off season, the silly season. That's because we spent a long time on the Hockey Hall of Fame. The silly season's here. Calgary Flames are open for business, it looks like. Elias Lindholm, Michael Backlund, Noah Hanifin, and Tyler Toffoli probably will not be back in Calgary anymore. Craig Conroy going full rebuild in Calgary.
They are going to be a team that probably has to just consider, well, do we tank? How far do we tank? And how long do we tank? That's the growing reality of what's going on in Calgary right now. They're not going to win with the lineup that's there.
No.
No matter who your coach is. You lost one of the best assistants to boot.
Right.
So you can't even say, oh, well, you know, we have a pretty good coaching structure in place. Well, that's broken now.
Right.
You knew that once you named Huska, you were going to have a problem.
Right.
You didn't name the guy that was going to be the guy.
Right.
Where we thought was going to be the guy, to be fair. Mm-hmm. We were wrong on that, but. Maybe there was a reason, and we don't, don't know. And you have all these guys that are either leaving or going to test free agency at the very least, which means, in Calgary's case, they're more than likely out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Now the question is, what can you get for players that the previous regime acquired?
I mean, I think Toffoli will get you something. You can still score. He's very productive. Had his best season with the Flames last year under Daryl Sutter. I think that he'll get you something.
Yeah, Toffoli. Yeah, Toffoli can produce anywhere.
Yeah, I think they can get something for him. The question is going to be, what are they going to get for Backlund, Lindholm, and Hanifin?
Yeah, because they'd have to. They would be able to trade his rights.
And don't forget, they got Lindholm and Hanifin from Carolina for the Dougie Hamilton trade.
That's important to note too. So there's going to be a lot of work for Craig Conroy and company.
But I think you got with Aginla there and Conroy, I think things are going to, they'll be okay.
Yeah. People forget that, you know, these weren't just good hockey players. They had pretty good hockey minds too. They had an idea, on how to sort of mold teams. And look, Conroy's been there for what, a decade now?
Yeah, easily.
I think it's going on 13, 14 years total overall.
Yeah, so I mean he knows that team in and out.
And it will help with hopefully maybe ownership starting to stabilize again. Everybody hopes.
You gotta throw in Dan Vladar too, because look, Dustin Wolf is coming and they gotta make room for him.
Yeah, I think Markstrom is all but gone.
So, you know,
I think the Flames
is going to look different.
I don't see Markstrom bouncing back much, and I kind of see them trying to get something or anything for him at the deadline.
Right. So we're going to see. You know, Calgary's an interesting. You have Winnipeg. Winnipeg, a lot of people connecting the dots. You have Connor Hellebuck, who's up. You have Mark Scheifele potentially on the move. Pierre-Luc Dubois. Mm. You have Wheeler. Could he be bought out? Can they try to trade him? I think they're buying him out. And Hellebuck continues to be linked to New Jersey and the Devils. And, you know, look, I think that's a piece for them that would put them over the top, to be honest, the number one goalie that they kind of desperately need. They still need it. I know fans are like, well, Vanacek, Schmid. Yeah, but you know what? If you have Hellebuck, he plays 65 games. I understand he's looking for Vasilevsky money. I think Fitzgerald can work his magic to get him in between 7 and 8 for 4 years. And that's your window with him. That gives Schmid a little bit more time to develop.
Yeah, because look, Schmid, all right, for those that don't know, and this is where, you know, me and Russ Cohen go way back on this, the debate on Schmid alone was priceless. Because nobody really knew what the Devils had in him. And you know, when he came over from Europe, he escaped what I would categorize as a disastrous situation. There's no other way around it. For the teams that he played, particularly his last stop in Europe, people need to look up just how dysfunctional that team was alone over in Basel. Oh, that was rough. I mean, and that soured a lot of people on Schmid, especially in the Devils organization, fairly or unfairly. So he goes over to the USHL. He rebuilds his image at the perfect time. Gets, playing time, which is what he really needed. Obviously comes to the AHL, does well there, makes the big splash here this year. But is he ready? Even for 15, 20 games next year? I'm going to say no.
I don't think he's ready yet. But he's close. if you had a guy in there that can mentor him a little bit, like a Hellebuck, maybe you get a Soros, a corporate guys like that. As Jamie McLennan said on the podcast, you get that veteran with the young guy learning. I think you do it. As far as Winnipeg goes, I mean, look,
that's a mess.
Look, it's not that they don't realize the team's ready to win, and I don't know if it's the coach. I think you got to pay a price. You play in these Canadian cold cities, you pay a price, and eventually it gets to you. And some guys want to play there, some guys don't. And I think Connor Hellebuck wants to win. That's the key. Like, he wants to win. They all the players, if you listen to their press conference, all admitted 2018 was their chance. Like, that was their chance to do damage. They got to the conference final. They should have been back there again. They didn't. They had chances to do it. But I think they need an attitude change and a locker room change, and you build around certain guys. If Hellebuck does go to New Jersey, it's a great fit. I know people are like, well, you can't pay him too much. But again, McLennan makes a great point. There's no debate about playing 40 goal scorers, $9 million, but a guy that could play 65 games and win you 40 games, oh, we can't pay him $9 million. Exactly. But I understand that,
that stability is pretty good.
Right. But I would do it over a short-term my stance on goalie contracts has always been 4 to 5 years. Like, you went even further than that. Don't waste your time. Like, the 7 times 10 with Florida for Bobrovsky, or the 7 times 8 times 10, I think it was, in Montreal for...
Yeah, what? Carey Price. Price. 10-5?
Yeah, you can't do that. Like, I'll give you... If you want to do 10-5, do it at 4-5. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, how's that worked out? I mean, what, it worked out Florida once.
Yeah, but Spencer Knight's coming back, and Bobrovsky's name's going to be on the trade market again.
Yeah, it's inevitable.
It's inevitable. It always is. Because if Knight turns his game around, he's the future of that team.
Not Bobrovsky. Because remember, Bobrovsky is now on the other side of the contract.
Right, exactly.
I hate thinking realistically about
no, but you have to, because
it's like being the old adult, old crotchety adult in the room that I swore I was never going to be.
No, but you realistically, you look at Florida, right? You think Bobrovsky is going to have a regular season? They're going to want to save him for the playoffs, but that's if they get there because of the injuries and guys going to missing time. You're missing two key players to potentially start the season with Aaron Ekblad and Brandon Montour. And Chris froze. So I want to hear his opinion on that, because I think Florida takes a step back, especially to start the season. You can't be behind the eight ball again. Like, you really can't. You can't keep clawing yourselves way back. You have Matthew Tkachuk, and they're going to do things the right way, and you're going to have Paul Maurice there. But still, Chris, I just want to get your thoughts on this. Like, you're missing Blackblad and Montour. You don't think Florida's going to take a step back? I think they will.
They almost have to. I mean, look, right? we're expecting right now, as of this moment, these guys to be out eight. What we read, right? I mean, I know I read this. A significant chunk of the 23-24 season.
Right, for Ekblad and Montour, right?
Yeah.
Well, Tkachuk will be back by training camp, so.
We think.
We think.
I mean, he's crazy enough. He probably will be.
Yeah, definitely.
In, in a good way.
Right. But you're missing two key pieces of your defense.
That's huge.
That's huge.
So, you know, obviously I had fun. I looked this up. I went down really, really bad rabbit holes for the podcast here. So you now are on the final 3 years of Bobrovsky's contract officially. Oh, by the way, and this is where the stuff all gets nice and juicy. Mr. Knight, guess what kicks in this year, Jim?
His new contract.
Which is 3 years at $4.5 million a season.
This was the Vegas problem. You can't be paying goaltenders they can't be getting $14 million worth of cap.
That's more than a sixth of your cap right there.
Right. That was the problem Vegas had when they had Fleury and Leonard making $14 million between the two guys. I think Fleury was near 7 or 8, and Leonard's new contract kicked in at 4 times 5.
Still a lot of money. Anytime you go in that double-digit range, even now.
Good. And then one guy's going to go.
And now it's like, all right, so presume, you know, and you hope for this because of the circumstances. You know, line comes back from, you know, the program.
Yeah.
Recharged, ready to go. Play, you hope that's the other, that's the ointment, and that's kind of the fly in the ointment is line.
Yeah, because we saw what he did down the stretch to get the Panthers in the playoffs, but is he the guy that can make a deep run with them?
And this is where it gets rough, because you don't have enough of a sample size. And again, they're paying
Bobrovsky 10.
You're paying your first two guys $14.5 million already.
Right.
Are you really going to pay Lyon, I don't know what, 2.5, 3 even?
So you're $17 million in goaltenders.
You're almost at 17 with three goaltenders. And then I can bury him, but that's only going to get me a little bit of relief. Something tells me no.
No, I think one of those, it's going to be, Knight's going to be on the team.
Does Bob get LTIR'd in some crazy freaking scenario where you're...
Yeah, Robida Island. He gets Robida Island.
I can't see it.
I can't see it either. Look, that Florida's got a lot of question marks. And obviously, you know, Ottawa with the Brinkett and, you know, he's going to go. I think he's out the door, as much as I don't want to see it. Because, again, something we talked about on the podcast yesterday, the only guy to change teams that had success was Matthew Tkachuk. Everybody else struggled because you have to adjust to your new surroundings. Look, even Meyer, now when he signs his new deal with New Jersey, he'll have time.
He'll have an adjustment period. Already had the adjustment period.
Right, he had the adjustment period. Right, so now he's going to come in refreshed. And DeBrincat to take time, but he still put up 26 goals. And imagine this team's only going to get better. And you're playing with Claude Giroux and Josh Norris is back.
There's pieces there.
There's pieces there that can get you the puck.
That's and Braden hits this right on the head. Is DeBrincat basically bullying his way to Detroit?
Yeah, but who's he got there besides Dylan Larkin? He doesn't have much. Ottawa Senators are ahead of the Detroit Red Wings.
Based on organizational development and what's there?
Yes.
Right at this minute? Yeah. Absolutely.
Stützle, Tkachuk, Shane Pinto, Giroux.
Stützle is going to have some freaking crazy year this year, and I don't think people are realizing this.
No, and they had to move him to the center position because of the injury to Norris.
And he did just fine.
And he did fine. So imagine you put Stützle with the Brinkett.
Holy crap.
I understand guys don't want to play certain places and you have to pay that cold weather tax. But if I'm him, and again, I'm not in his position. I don't know what things are being said. And I don't know why he wants to make this decision. But if I look at it, is my best chance to win in Ottawa? Yes. My best chance to put point production up? Yes. Because of what's there. I think he can get back to 40 goals in Ottawa.
I don't doubt it. I don't. And I know people have said, oh, that sounds crazy. And it's really not.
It's not crazy. If you look at the roster.
This was an Ottawa team that even last year, I would argue, probably should have, I would say, should have averaged at least a half a goal a game more than they did.
And go back to it. Cam Talbot misses the first 5 weeks. Okay, Anton Forsberg's thrown in a position he's not used to. Solgaard played well. When he had so many injuries. They started slow. Okay, that's not happening this year. It better not, because
the biggest thing that Ottawa needs more than anything else is help for their team defense. That needs to stay healthy. You know, guys like Zub need to stay healthy. They need the cohesiveness more than anything of not having all those injuries to start off the season.
Right, exactly. Those guys will be back. I know Detroit is being linked to DeBrincat and there are other places, but again, what were they going to give up? Because Ottawa paid a price to get him. If they can get a top first round pick for him, all well and fine. Because you're getting back what you lost. I just don't know. I think maybe his best decision is to stay in Ottawa. But again,
it should be, and yet
he's probably going to leave, and he's going to go south of the border. Again, Detroit, LA. I think LA is more in on Dubois because they need a center.
Yeah. Just looking at this from a sense and sensibility standpoint.
What's the cap hit going to be?
You got a cap hit to consider. Oh, by the way, and there's the obvious in this. They don't have to trade DeBrincat.
No, they don't.
That's a key point in all this.
Not yet, anyway.
They don't have to yet.
No, they don't. They don't have to. It's like with the Joe Sakic thing with Matt Duchene. Everybody expected it to happen, but it didn't happen until the middle of the season or the early part of the season. They can wait on it. Look, they have an arbitration hearing. They're trying to reduce the cap hit by 15%. You know, look, the qualifying offer down, like all that stuff. It's going to be very interesting to see what they do and what happens next week.
I'll toss two more teams out there. They're on the fringe. Dallas.
I could see it. I don't think Vegas either.
But I think this one is interesting because they need scoring desperately.
Is it Carolina?
Nope.
No, okay. I would throw Carolina in there.
I would throw Carolina as a fringe, but I don't think they're in a position to do it.
I don't think they're going to do it. I don't think they're going to do it because they have too many guys to sign.
I'm going to throw this one out there. Nashville's a team, that sneaky team to keep an eye on. We really don't know what they're going to do once Barry Trotz fully takes over next week.
But again, they're a team in the murky middle. They should be going the other way.
They should be. But I could see a scenario where they tried to sit there and they show guys like Saros, hey, we're committed to winning.
In that division? Because, again, St. Louis is still there. Colorado's not going anywhere. Minnesota's not going anywhere. Dallas is not going anywhere. Winnipeg is going to still be a tough out. Like
they're going to be in that third or fourth spot
again,
maybe even fifth.
Right, again.
Can they find a way to do two things? Can they maybe move up at the expense of another team and get a little bit lucky to avoid, say, facing the top team in the West?
But they're still going to play a good team.
Oh, they're going to still play a good team. But if I'm sitting there and I'm in the position of devil's advocate, I'd rather want to play Minnesota.
Yeah, I would rather play Minnesota too.
But again, I don't know if they can get there. Let's be honest. They have to get lucky to get there.
Right, and they don't. So
they have to make a move like that somehow by some miracle.
So who's going back the other way? Because they got to move money.
They got to move money. And well, Detroit, you know, Yzerman has a fascination with centers. Could you get Johansson somehow to move? I know the contract.
Three-way?
Rough.
Three-way
trade? I think there's a three-way trade to be had. Look, let's make this clear. On the Full Press Hockey Weekly show on Thursday night, just before 8 p.m., we are not saying that this is going to happen. We are just listing possibilities.
Yeah, we're playing armchair GM, and this is what a lot of people do because we're not in the room.
Yeah, we don't know.
Well, we don't know. But could a three-way – I think there's going to be more three-way trades that happen.
Yeah, we're seeing the groundwork of things that are definitely going to I will tell you this, Jim, just from a tip of drafts past. And especially the one that happened in New Jersey, because that was the ultimate poster child for chaos.
Yes, it was.
2013 draft, real fast. You heard more floor side rumors of trades that eventually happened than in any other draft.
Oh, absolutely. And look, that was a one-day draft. It was all day. Never
Boston,
again.
Boston forgot the draft.
Yeah, Boston forgot the draft. I mean, he could potentially.
Lots of questions. This is what I love.
This is what we love. Look, Colorado needs a center. They may make Gerard available. They definitely need a center because
they need to free up salary still.
I mean, look, Landeskog will be LTIR'd. That's going to be it. But the conference probably not coming back. So that's two centers now, unless they get them real cheap.
Yeah, they still need to free up salary to do anything substantial.
Right. So they're in a bind. I mean, he might be the casualty that goes. He might be.
They're going to bring up somebody to replace Eric Johnson.
Yeah, Johnson's gone. He's gone. Colorado's got to work. We don't know the status of Valeri Nichushkin.
Right now, as of this moment,
he's okay.
He's okay.
He's okay.
Whatever happened, apparently, according to Seattle and such, it's okay.
It's okay.
Is it murky? Right. It's murky. But from a legal standpoint, it's right now okay.
It's okay. All right. So Nichushkin's on a roster. All right. So, but they still have to figure out a way to clear cap space, even with Landeskog going on LTIR or whenever he goes on it. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be crazy. They likely to get on a tape. I mean,
there's a lot of work to do, man. Chris McFarland might want to just start drinking heavily.
Yeah.
Right now.
He's got a lot of work to do. He's got a lot of work to do over there in Colorado.
This is not easy.
It's not going to be easy for them.
And I know Sakic said it as such, even a few weeks ago. I forget where he was. He was doing some show on a random, God knows what radio network. And he basically hinted that this is not going to be anywhere near as easy as everybody in Colorado thinks.
They're up against it. They really are up against it. So Colorado has work to do. Edmonton has work to do.
God, look at all these teams that it just seems like, oh, it was looking so great. And now it's like,
no. LA's got to find a goalie because Korpisalo is not coming back. So they need help. We don't know what Carolina is going to do. They got to re-sign Brett Pesce, and we've documented it, and we're not going to go on it again. But we know how the owner works, and we know how the team works, and the money, and they're going to have to finally start paying guys to stay there, because I know it's worked in the past where they can come back and win, and
you know who's coming up too in the not too distant future.
Aho, right?
Yeah, remember that slightly team-friendly offer sheet?
He ain't gonna want
8.5 now.
He's gonna want 8.5 now. He's gonna want 9 now. So they have work to do to bring back depth, guys. I mean, you know, like it's everywhere. I mean, it's the silly season. A lot of guys tied a lot of places. You know, the top 10 free agents. You know, in order of Barbashev, Orlov, and Bertuzzi are my top three. You can put them in any order. It doesn't really matter. But, you know, guys out there, Aiden Hill, Jarrett, like, there's a lot of stuff. So go check it out, fullpresshockey.com, for the top 10 board, for my top 10 board, how I see things.
We're going to have some fun with this. Don't worry. We'll have an odds perspective on this.
And to be fair, I did not put Bergeron and Krejci in there and Kane, just because there's so many unknowns with them. And, you know, we don't know what they're going to do. I think Krejci and Bergeron are not coming back. I just have this feeling that they may not come back. That means Boston needs to find a center. Centers. Again, where does Barbashev go? There's so many. It's going to be fun off season.
Yeah, people, we're a little less than 9 days away from free agency.
Absolutely. It's going to be fun. I mean, it's definitely a fun, you know, it's going to be a fun time. It's going to be a fun time. We're going to be here for the ride. You guys need to be here. We'll be here. Don't worry. I'll be in Nashville next week. Don't you guys worry. I'll keep you abreast of everything that's going on. So, Braden, thank you so much for the questions tonight. This has been a great episode of the Full Press Hockey Weekly Show here on Full Press NHL Twitter. I've been your host, Jim Berenger, Chris Wassel, Ian behind the scenes. Yes, free agency is on a Saturday. Get your drinks, get your coffee, get everything ready. But thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Get it at Full Press Coverage on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Take care, everybody. Enjoy the NHL draft next week.